Yo, 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 what is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Win-Win Effect Show presented by WinJack Studios. I am your host, Chris Ross. If you don't know me, if you're new to us, fine. You're going to get to know us pretty quickly. But if you aren't new to us, there's a good chance if you're watching a video component of the content right now, you've seen this beautiful mug on the other side of this. Steve Sim, it's not me in the future. You know, second time coming on to the show, he's got a new book coming out, and I wanted to make sure that I did everything possible to promote that coming up. His good friend, Steve Sims, welcome back to the show, man.
Thanks for having me, pal. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here with you.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I was just kind of telling you a joke before. I was like, all right, your microphone makes you sound British. My microphone makes me sound American. We flip-flopped, and he's obviously in the States, and I'm over here in London right now. I was kind of laughing about it, but welcome back, and I'm really excited about going through the, you know, the new book and all the things you have going on. I mean, it's kind of like one of those things where I was telling a friend of mine, he's putting up right now for people that are not watching, well, the video, the component of this, but go check it out October 18th. We'll keep plugging that. But the main thing is I wanted to talk about, you know, a lot of things you have going on, but we see eye to eye on so many different types of levels, and we kind of learned that about each other for the first time that you came on. You're like, did you read the book? I'm like, no, I didn't read the book. And you were like, how did you know that? I'm like, I don't know, because I kind of understand the formula behind making shit happen. This is what we do. But if I only ask one question at the beginning of this, and it's kind of like redundant, but one question, if you had to introduce yourself in 2 to 3 sentences, how would you do that?
Curious, aggravated 5-year-old.
I like that. Why would you say it that way?
I noticed that a lot of us, we lose the ability to be curious, and we lose the ability to be a child, and we need to be aggravated, because without aggravation, nothing gets done. 100%. You know, I noticed a lot of people, like, first name drop of the day, I've worked with Elon Musk. So you hang out with Elon Musk, whenever anyone says to him, we got a problem, he doesn't look for a solution. He tries to understand why there is the problem in the first place.
Right.
And so he gamifies everything. He's a child. And I noticed as we've grown up, and I've got kids. Have you got kids?
I do. I have one.
Right. How old?
2.5. Well, almost right. 3 now. Yeah.
All right. So they're going to get from that age to, I don't know, 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. And they're going to put a, what is it, a boy or girl?
Little girl. Yeah.
Okay, so she may dress up as a princess, or she may dress up as a Marvel superhero by putting a pillowcase around her neck and making it pretend as though it's a cape. And you'll buy into it. You'll condone it. You'll encourage it. You'll be like, oh, you look brilliant. You look fantastic. What are you doing? Oh, I'm slaying the dragons as she's running around the house with a wooden spoon. But if she does that at the age of 22, what do? You say, stop it, grow up. Right. And all of the most successful people in the planet, they've stayed children. Mm-hmm. They've stayed curious. And I didn't realize it until I started to grow and really get dynamic and impactful, that I was starting to go for goals and achievements, which while other people would mock, I didn't care. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't going to be subdued. And just like us saying before, we get shit done. Right. And that's the main trait. But it's that kid in us that goes, I wonder what's in that. Let me just unscrew the back. You know, yeah. And we just have a little bit. We may not be able to put it back together again. But I think curiosity today is one of the biggest attributes that can keep you successful and in business. And if you're not aggravated, nothing gets done.
Right. I love that about what you said there. And I'm an engineer. When's the last time you ever seen me filtrate oil as a chemical engineer, right? But right? But an engineer type of mind, I'm looking into seeing how I can improve it and how does it work, rather than talking about how it works, right? So, I mean, I look at things and go, okay, how can I make that a little bit better and how can I solve more problems? But I love what you said about solving the problem. It's not how can I solve the problem. It's you're putting a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound eventually, right? Yeah. So I want to know, how did this problem even start? And which one of you ass clowns didn't tell me about this? I mean, that actually started this whole, like, you know what I mean? This like wildfire worth of, you know, whatever, and is bringing my attention to it now. So, but when you're peeling back that curiosity, you're using your imagination as kids. That's what we use as kids. And we're using our imagination. If my daughter sat down and we were having tea, then I'm having tea and we're having tea in the Queen's freaking garden somewhere, right? And I'm going to use my imagination. But at some point, we conform.
Yeah.
We stop asking that one fixing question that we both agree on is why. Why? And that's the hardest question for a lot of people, and especially me coming from, I guess you say, education sales. I would put that question on pretty quickly. Why? Why do you want it? They were like, what do you mean, why do I want it? Because you're selling it to me. I'm like, I'm not here to sell you. I'm here to ask you, why do you want this? And then see if that could be something that would be in the best interest of you short-term, long-term, and also help my company. Would you agree? And they're like, yes. I'm like, well, what's the problem? Answer the question, why? One thing I loved about your story, and we kind of go back to the very first episode, is that when people would book in for stuff and you would sell it, you didn't even have it built yet. You would call them up and ask them what would be the best scenario for you when you do come to this event. How can I make it worth your while?
Yeah, you're talking about the speakeasies,
right? Yeah, the speakeasy. Yeah,
and we touched on that before. Anybody out there, and I want to make this about you. I don't want to make it an advert on me. anyone out there, and I'm talking to the people listening to this. If you think you're credible, if you think you've got a following, then try and charge for it and see what you can do with it.
Mm-hmm.
You see, here's the thing. If I'm giving stuff away for free, don't bitch at me. It's free. Do with it what you want to do. Don't do want it. Waste it, you know, manipulate it, palm it off as your own. It's there for free. But if I charge you to be somewhere, two things happen. One, you're now committed to making it worth your while. You mm-hmm. spend $2,000 with me, you want 10 grand's worth of information back. You spend $2,000 with me, I'm now obligated to give you that back. But there's a lot of people out there that you think you're credible, you think you've got a following, they won't pay attention until they pay.
100%.
And so that's what I started doing. And I wanted to test if I was credible enough. So I said, I'm going to do an event, 2 days, me, my friends, we're going to give it to you all, $2,000. And that was it. And there was nothing behind it. And we ended up calling them speakeasies. These have been going for 4 years now, three a year. Every single one sells out. And people literally pay and have no idea what's going to happen until they get there.
And I love that spontaneous side of you. And it ties in with your personality really well. You don't do them. Even when you do have the events, you don't do them in like auditoriums and like hotels and shit. I think at one point, I think we were talking about this at one point, you did one in a brothel somewhere.
Yeah. I did it in the Buddy Ranch brothel.
Reno. And you do it in prior Navy guy. So aircraft carrier. I think you did one in a hangar somewhere. So
we did a hangar. We did it in the Tesla plant. We did it in the Manny Chat headquarters. We did it in Elon's Gigafactory once.
Right.
So we've done them in old disused theaters, actual proper speakeasies. We did it in an apartment in New York, which was the last registered brothel in New York. Mm-hmm. And they made like a little bit of a museum out of it. So we never do conference rooms. And that takes us back to that childlike curiosity.
Yes.
If everything is vanilla and everything sits down on a perfect table with your A4 pad and your pencil, you're eating away at this creativity.
You are.
So I don't like it. So I do. And I've always said that I do these events for me. I invite friends that I want to hang out with, mm-hmm. and I may let you come. So right. that's the kind of way. I'm not one of these guys going, okay, well, I've got to make 400 grand out of this event. Well, I can't make 400 grand because we only top it off at 40 people.
Right.
We don't allow I love that. People to come.
I love that because you're controlling the energy and you're taking the energy and you're making sure that's your obviously moral compass is making sure that energy is recyclable. And that's very difficult to do in an event space. And yeah, you mentioned making it very vanilla. You're putting a lot of pressure on the speakers that you do book to come in and have to light a fire in a freaking Antarctica somewhere.
Yeah.
And you're not willing. If the speaker isn't adept to understand energy and how to work a crowd, then you can pay them as much money as you want. Doesn't mean you're going to make anything.
Yeah, it's tough. We didn't know 40 was going to be the number. I think the first time I ever did one, it ended up being 30 something. The next time I think we had like 60, and I was like, the next one we did, I think was 80, and I was like, I'm losing connection.
Right.
And we went down to 40, and all of a sudden, you know, you can work with 40 people. 40 people can actually work with you. You can have a conversation. And if you really focus on the room, if you really focus on making sure that the right people are in that room, then everything else is easy.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to focus on your room. If you let someone, and this comes from my old doorman days, if you let a drunkard into the front door, it's only a matter of time before you're kicking them off the dance floor. So if you, as a business owner, protect your front door like it's a bar or a nightclub, you remove 99% of the problems inside.
Mm-hmm. That comes back from obviously your first gig, right? Was understanding how to work and who to let in and who not to let in.
Yeah.
Into the club. And I love that about your story is you understand the room. No matter what room you go into, and sometimes the rooms that we go into, we're not supposed to be there in the first place.
Most of them.
Right? They're going to kick us out eventually. You know what I mean? My way of looking at it is like, how fast can I solve one of your problems and do it with ease to the point to where I'm selling through you to everybody you know?
Yep.
And that's what you do so well is that people get that gauge of your energy. I mean, have you put a lot of work into understanding what makes you tick to everybody else? And that's a difficult question probably to answer, but
yeah, it's a tough one. Yes, no, don't want to know. There's many different answers to that because I remember when my first book, Blue Fishing, came out, which was 5 years ago, strangely enough. When that first came out, I thought to myself, no one's going to buy this, you know, because what I'm doing, and we spoke about this earlier.
Right.
It's simple, stupid stuff. You know, I do this, I do this, this happens. Now, it's written a little bit more eloquently than that, but it really was never supposed to have been the major worldwide success that it was.
Right.
Until I suddenly realized people aren't doing the stupid shit. Mm-hmm. They are trying to outsource that problem to people that are less qualified than you. Mm-hmm. And so it just became this horrible, vicious, cancerous circle of getting nowhere. Mm-hmm. And so I did start to kind of look at it and go, well, why are people so lazy? That's your first thought.
Entitlement.
And then you realize they're not lazy. They're actually terrified. Mm-hmm. Most people are scared of doing stuff, not because they will fail, but they're scared someone's going to see them fail.
Right.
And all of these revelations started coming. That basically was the emphasis of the new book. But I started looking at myself going, how can a bricklayer from East London, as gorgeous as I look, be doing this with Elon Musk and the Pope? Is it my Harvard education? Is it my eloquentness? You know, and I really did try to understand what it was. And it did come down to the five-year-old's approach.
Mm-hmm.
I do things simply. Mm-hmm. And when you really focus on the simplicity of your brand, your message, the way you communicate, like you say, I get into a room, whose problem can I solve?
Mm-hmm.
You
know, quickly.
If you can get into that kind of simplicity, brevity is king. And that is really what I feel My superpower is it's that five-year-old simplicity of, okay, how can I make this beautiful for you that you'll want me to stay?
Right, right. I think also it's your banter. You know, pretty quick-witted when it comes to, I mean, the reason why I say this is because I'm from America and now I live in England. It's very dry humor here, but my grandfather, which he's Italian, but he passed away when I was, I think, what, 21? I remember going into military and coming back and was like, thank you, because I can have a conversation with anyone. You know what I mean? After growing up with him, he had very dry humor. And it's different for Americans because it's a little bit more over the top funny. But when you have sarcasm, I speak sarcasm fluently.
Yeah.
And here in England, I kind of get along with people in England. Most people don't really get along. It's having that type of, I can have a conversation with just pretty much anybody and shoot the shit for a good 2 to 3 minutes. And then they go, okay, what do you want? And it kind of makes things a little easier.
It is funny. You know, I actually, and you've got to be a bit careful of it, because I know I was at an event a little while ago and I was just chewing into someone with the usual kind of like East London sarcasm. And he took my son to a side and he was like, what have I done to offend your father? You know, I am so sorry. I've never meant anything more than respect. And Henry had to come over to me going, Dad, you know, he's upset himself. So, you know, can I go and settle the girly down? You know, and of course, my son's got that little kind of sarcasm as well. And So it does actually, you really got to know when you can use it, when you can't use it, and people get used to it. But it's a funny, learning the British sarcasm, and that's the classic one, you know, what is it? That's it. Sarcasm is the lowest form of wit.
All right.
And I think it's basic. If anyone's ever watched Monty Python, they realized it's the highest form.
It is. I actually had some people come into town, and we went to the Royal Opera House or whatever it's called. I can't remember for the life of me right now, remember who it was, but this guy that plays all these instruments and he's a comedian. He's big out here in England, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head for no reason. But they weren't laughing. They're like, I don't get it. I'm like, it's because it's British humor, but I get it.
It is. Well, I got three kids. One of them was born in Switzerland. One of them was born, same mum, Claire, but we traveled a lot. One was born in Hong Kong. One was born in Switzerland. And my youngest, who is now 17, was born here in America and has basically spent most of his life here in America. So he hasn't been around a lot of Brits. So we'll actually, even today, and we've got every Brit Box and Acorn subscription we can on our TV. So we're watching Wilty and we're watching Graham Norton. And we're watching all of the British stuff. And my son will still stand there and go, what did he say? And just won't understand the basic terminology.
It's called loopbacks. They do a lot of loopbacks and drop certain things in conversations. Well, what I'm saying is they'll say a joke and then it'll loop back to that funny part and hit it and keep touching on it. I actually learned how to sell. It's funny we're having this conversation. It naturally just goes there. I learned how to sell through comedians.
Oh, yeah.
More than I have in anybody ever watching. Because I watched a lot of stand-up growing up.
Yeah.
And I would take whatever. I made it my business to learn what you really wanted without you telling me what that was. And I'm going to drop it in conversations.
To see
if I'm getting
delivery.
Close. Oh, yeah. And I would keep coming back to that touch point and that pain point and keep nailing on it. So, and I would always, and I was almost to the point where I would trick myself, because I wanted to trick myself to make it more difficult. I'm like, pain or pleasure. You don't need to tell me yet. I'll tell you the end, which one motivates you to more. And then I keep coming back to it. And they're like, Chris, you're an asshole. But I'm like,
I'll tell you who uses that a lot. Cause we got clients, in our branding company that have, they do marketing for, communication, pickup artists, and you know, how to meet the perfect guy and how to meet the perfect girl and those kind of things. So we do some of that branding, but I got into this whole industry of these people, and they do a lot of the loop back where they'll actually start a conversation about a restaurant, and then they'll go through this conversation about how it's a phenomenal restaurant, and they'll really build it up until, while they're talking to the person they're with, they'll finally invite you to the restaurant. Mm-hmm. You're so, you know, wow, this is such an amazing. He wants me there. And I think what you're proving here is understanding or listening to what's being said and unsaid,
mm-hmm.
and knowing how to utilize it in the point of communication.
100%.
And you brought up, you actually spoke about it, and I think the audience need to be aware, and they need to try it, how absolutely threatening and terrifying the three-letter word is, why?
Mm.
Now, I'll get people that will just text me, or they'll Facebook message or Instagram or one of the other million platforms out
right.
there, and they'll go, hey, Steve, I'm in LA on Sunday. I'd love to buy you a drink. You know, as though I can't afford my own drink by now. But I'll just respond with why? One word, and I'll just go, why? Question mark. And I'll get, and here's the dumb thing. 2/3 of the responses I get are borderline vicious and violent. Oh, my God, I thought you were called. Someone told me you were, oh, my God, you're such an arrogant prick. They got all of that out of me asking why. And then I get other people going, great question. I wanted to talk to you about this, or I'm interested in this, or I wanted to talk to you about coaching, or speakeasy, or I wanted you to help brand my new product, or I'd wonder if you'll be, an affiliate or can introduce. And they'll give me the reason. Now, once they've given me the reason, I can go, well, actually, thank you very much for the invite, but Christy would be better off suited. So
right.
let me introduce you, or Ralph, or no, this isn't in our wheelhouse. But the bottom line of it is, and I don't know if this is an age thing, I think it's also with the people I hang out with. I know I can make more money, but I also know I can't make more time.
Yes.
So I'm incredibly selfish with what 100%. I do with it. 100%. And I filter it by a very simple question, why? And it's incredible how many people do that. And I'm urging everyone listening to this. If someone says something to you, just turn around to them and go, why? Yeah, hey, I'd love to take you out for a drink tonight. Why? And just watch them stop. Don't talk.
Yeah, don't say powerful. Nothing else.
Oh,
don't say
nothing else. And it can cripple people. But the response you get afterwards can tell you all you need to know about the relationship that you would have had with that person in, say, 6 months' time. So it's a great question. I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah, I love that question because every time that I do ask questions, and this is probably over the 15 years of obviously doing what I've done for a living, but every time that I ask a really impactful question, I write it down and I'm like, okay, how do I answer that question? Because I want to make sure that I'm adept on both sides and actually equipped myself to deal with the rebuttal, right? So when I start asking the question why and don't say anything else, I want to see where they go first. And they usually go how I can help them first. But if they start with how they can solve a problem that I'm not seeing, I will pretty much respond.
Do you know this conversation? I knew it would be with you because I love you, boy, and I knew it would go anywhere it bloody went. But what we've just spent a lot of time talking about is quite simply the art of communication and how bad people are getting at it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can actually download an app that can do anything from helping me build a bridge, fly a plane to probably open heart surgery. But you still can't download an app that's going to enable me to communicate with another human being like a human being. And here's a couple of things and then what I do to get over it. Like, as you say, you write down a question and then analyze how can I respond to it well.
Yep.
You're fine-tuning that art of response. Now, I've noticed over the years, we've moved into a transactional society.
100%.
I say to my son now, I go, hey, George, put the air conditioning on. He could be stood next to the bloody Nest system and he'll literally pick up his phone and go, hey, Alexa, turn it, make it coarser. And we'll bark orders into AI. You know, we've got Amazon, Siri, Alexa. We've got so much of that automation that's happening. That's actually hurting our ability to communicate. And I've realized the only thing I have apart from, and we share this, stunning good looks,
right.
is our ability to communicate with another human being. And I also wanted to be able to do it. And you don't get better at communication by having a conversation with someone who's really good at it. because they can carry you. It's like if you've ever danced. I remember me and my wife, we can't dance for shit. We went to a party once and there was a salsa specialist there. He flew her around like she was some world champion.
Right, yeah.
He was controlling it, you know?
Right.
I love you, Claire, but, you know, dance is not high on the stakes there. So in order for you to become better at communicating, you've got to have awkward conversations.
Yes. Very difficult conversations. Very difficult.
Yeah. And it was about 3.5 years ago that a friend of mine, Jason Gaynard, up in Toronto, he invited me to prison. And I went to prison on an event with a group called Defy Ventures. And we actually communicate with what they call EITs, entrepreneurs in training. These are lifers. These are maximum security level 4 prisoners that, to be blunt, most of them are never going to get out.
Right.
But they can still do stuff inside. But they also want to look at how they can take their hustle from the street into productive businesses.
Yes.
And I went in there and I did that one day. Now, look, I'm a big, ugly guy from East London. There's not a lot of people that scare me. And even if they do, I'm probably too stupid to back off. But being in that room, that was a different level.
Right.
That was a different chapter. And I'm in there having conversations. The first thing I noticed was they were nervous to talk to me. Because as far as they were concerned, I was a successful individual that had taken my time to talk. They were terrified of saying something stupid.
Right. Right.
And I was terrified to speak to them. Mm-hmm. In one day, it changed. I speak all over the planet. I can almost see the pre-prison versus the post-prison way that I interacted. And just as you say, look, you may have this issue going on in your head. I may have this fear going on in my head. So let's divert all of that awkward tension into the problem you have and the solution I can provide.
Right.
If you focus on that, everything else goes away. And I started after that taking people to prison. We don't make any money out of it. It isn't a money thing. But I've been going to prison with entrepreneurs for the last 3.5 years, and I was in there, I think, a month and a half ago. I'm in there again in, I think, about 2 months to Tehachapi, which is a level 4 maximum security jail up in North California, just outside of Los Angeles. It ain't a pretty place to hang out. And I take about 40 entrepreneurs in there, and I say to everyone, if you are cautious or scared when you have a conversation, if you're nervous when you have to give the Monday morning meeting, if you're nervous when you have to do a training session, if you think you're a decent speaker on stage, whatever, this will get that process of you uncomfortable. And even to a new level of uncomfortable, that when you come out of there, you're never uncomfortable again. And I've had people saying that, you know, I used to worry about what Jimmy would say in the back of the room. I spent one day in jail. Now I come out, I can handle him.
Yes.
Now, I'm not saying you're going to shank him as he walks down the hallway, but you now know how to engage in a conversation focused at the solution. And if you lose someone, how to gain that attention back. That was one of the weird things for me. So I'm glad that you're bringing up the requirement for people to focus on communication.
And I love that you're circling back to it on top of that. Cause I mean, it shows the type of person you are for even picking up on the 3 conversations that people have inside of their brain while you're speaking. And it's the egotistical conversation, my favorite, the emotional conversation, and the point of view. Is when you're caught in a point of view, is like, what shoulda, coulda, woulda. And now you're now tapped into the expectation of something. Well, I understand those 3 conversations, and it's not about from what I'm telling, what I say is bullshit. It's about how it's being received. And then from those nonverbal cues, I'm going to actually get a gauge of actually what's really happening, because most people can't articulate how they feel. Well, I can kind of get a gauge on the energy and understanding how that's being received, and then go, okay, now I know where I need to go now with this conversation. So I'm like, and I like to use a lot of like hand gestures, like especially when I'm speaking, and I'm like, okay, for this part of the room is getting it. Okay, I'm going to drop an anchor here and I'm going to come back. And I'm going to keep referring back to certain things that I pick up on people. And even when people are looking and they kind of look away and they look at their phone, I'm like, do I not have your full attention? Sometimes I apply a little pressure to get something from them, because that means I'm not getting a good gauge on their energy. But it's having that difficult conversation that most people that shy away from. But I like to have difficult conversations, because now I'm going to get to the core and the root and the nucleus of the freaking problem. That makes me more effective. So, and this, I mean, obviously we're going to tie back into this book. I knew this was going to happen when we get on a call.
What book?
I was like, what book are we talking about? But it's the achieving ridiculous results. Well, if you don't know how to start thinking better, and this is how it ties back into those three conversations. If I can change the way you think, I can change the way you do everything.
Yeah.
But it's having the ability and the courage to have those difficult conversations to get to what they really want to visualize. And then why? And that's the next part, right? So is that what led you to the book, or is just a bunch of like people asking you, okay, you got to get to the next book, right? Obviously you had so much success with the blue fishing, the art of making things happen.
No, it was not that. I got no peer pressure on a second book. Okay, I had no expectation of a second book, but I do want to just put a bookend on your conversation there, because you brought it up again, and you're doing a wonderful job for your listeners here. I truly hope they appreciate this conversation that you're bringing up. But you're talking about the hand gestures and anchoring and bringing. Mm-hmm. Have you ever gone through the 738-55 law?
It's ringing a bell right now, but
there's some famous mathematician came up with it, but then Chris Voss from,
yeah, I know. I met Chris Voss, but we got a very similar name, right?
And yeah, someone exactly.
connected
yeah.
me. Yeah. Someone connected me. What does he do with the Swan group or something?
Yeah,
we haven't
with
talked
the Swan
on a phone
group, but he was the FBI negotiator.
Yes.
And they would bring him in when, you know, someone was holding up a bank and threatening to kill people.
Right.
But he was an FBI negotiator, and he used to run on a 738-55. And he said that 55% of your communication is based on your body movement, your
yes.
hand gestures. 38% of your conversation is based on your tonality. You know, mm-hmm. are you engaging? Are you enthusiastic? The variation of your voice. 7% was the actual content of the message.
Yep.
So of any communication, only 7% matters of what you're actually saying. Everything else matters on how you're saying it and what you say, and mm-hmm. those kind of things, the tonality. That's why a lot of the old days, subtitled movies used to lose it so much.
Yes.
Not subtitled, dubbed movies.
I know what you mean.
It wouldn't carry the same enthusiasm, and there'd be a disconnect. People would be like, eh. Now we look at things like, what was that massive great hit from the Korean? Games. I forget what it was called.
Games people play?
No, there was a Korean show that not Hunger Games, but it was dubbed, and it was a fantastic show. Where they get shot and they get killed, but they've got to win money at the end.
I can't remember the name of it.
But they matched the tonality in the dubbing so well mm-hmm. that it
right.
became a massive hit. So in communication, 738, focus on how you are talking to people, the tonality, and then the content in that order.
Right.
So yeah, you asked a question about the book before I went off on a weird tangent.
No, actually, we could put a pin on that just for a second. I want to talk about the Chris Voss thing. I was connected through two or three different people, and I didn't know who it was. Okay. This tells you how like zoned in I am at doing what I do. I never knew who it was. I'm like, I keep hearing this name. And then we got connected, and then COVID happened. We're supposed to do an interview, and then nothing ever obviously transpired from there. But it reminded me, I just wrote myself a note. But you touched on one thing I want to make sure that everyone understands. You mentioned Chris Voss, and it triggered me right when you said 7% of communication isn't, no one can pick it up, right? It doesn't matter what you say. Well, sometimes I don't ask the question like, does that make sense? That's like the most dumbest question you can ever ask someone, and everyone knows it's coming. I like to paraphrase and get things wrong on purpose to see if they pick up on it.
Yeah.
Because people would much rather correct you than to say they accept it. Right. So I will purposely get it wrong when I paraphrase. just to see if they catch it. And then they go, no, Chris, I know it was actually 17 or 19 or whatever. I was like, okay, yeah, forgive me. Because now I know you're engaged.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing. You test as a speaker, and I do a lot of training for speakers. Mm. I say that there's two things that you got to focus on to be a good speaker. One of them, and this is outside of your content. You know, this is how you actually communicate what you've got to say to your people. One, know the audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the classic, and that works in sales. You know who you're dealing with. But then the second one is a lot of the time what a lot of people miss out on, which is what you're talking about, is know the temperature of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And that temperature of the room, is it aggravated? Is it happy? Is it lazy? Is it quiet? Is it engaged? And that's what you can look at, that temperature. When you've gone on stage, and I've had this, you know, you can't help it. Comedians are terrified of it. If the actor that goes on before them is crap and kills the mood of the audience, then that person now has to raise it up to a funny level.
I like
before
it that
they
way.
Can beat them. Yeah, you like it that. And as speakers, you know, like I've been out on there, but I remember once I was, the guy was speaking. He was terrible. Something happened to his slideshows. He started cursing the audience, cursing the event, and walked off stage. And then the person that was putting the event on, rather than handling it and coming out going, hey, I'm so sorry about that. It was technical. Roger, you know, I apologize. You feel that way. Without doing any of that kind of thing to the audience, the MC just comes out and goes, and here's Steve Sims. And there was this whole intro that I was supposed to have. There was supposed to be a video. There was supposed to be music. And he just went, Steve Sims. And I just walked out while the audience were all kind of a lot more mature that have just been basically sworn at. And I'm up there going, this is going to be fun. So you've got to know the temperature of the people you're dealing with in order to be able to communicate with them appropriately. And you're right. Check the communication. Check the engagement. Constantly check throughout a conversation that they are present.
Right. In making sure they're present, you need to make sure that you're captivating enough to grasp their attention.
Yes.
Right? I mean, no one gives a shit about what you're talking about. It's how well you're able to deliver it through them to make them feel something. And most people don't know how to feel or even receive. And that's sometimes understanding and engaging that room and engaging the temperature of the room. If you don't even know how to really have 5 to 10 different ways of being able to articulate your message, then you are, if it doesn't go your way, I've watched a lot of people that, this is the reason why I don't go on a lot of podcast shows now, but they would have a script and they would ask me these questions on the script. And someone sent me the script, and I'm sure you get this a lot because you go on a lot of shows, but they'll send you, here are the questions. I'm like, I don't want to know the questions. I'll answer when I get there, right? Like, go with the conversation. Have your bullet points and let me do what I got to do. Like, I'll promise you, I'm not going to, it's my personal brand. I'm not going to let you screw it up. So it's fine. So,
yeah, I'll often just respond with, not going to read these. See you on the podcast. You
yeah. Know, but... Well, you're actually a little bit more kind than I am sometimes when it comes to, because it gets frustrating. You know what I mean? Because then I have to take time out of my day to look at the question. It doesn't matter to me. Like, what would you like? How can I help your audience? That's the question.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, when it ties back into, you know, of course, I'll paraphrase again, obviously repeat the question before we went on our little tangent, which we typically do when we talk. But when you go to the, like, what sparked you to go to this book? Did you see an area of opportunity since you've already, you spoke on that you didn't get a lot of pressure for book number two, but were you feeling something, obviously, with maybe some of the things that are out there right now or not out there for people to really understand?
So you're correct. Blue Fishing is still selling remarkably well.
Right.
That's absolutely going for it. It was aggravation, like most things in the entrepreneur's world, that created the movement.
Right.
When COVID came across or came to us, I saw an element of people that I didn't like, didn't agree with, couldn't understand, couldn't reach, you know, those people going, hey, I've got a couple of years on my hand. You know, what can I binge watch on Netflix and how fat can I get during these next 2 years? that didn't kind of, you know, get to me. So I started, and it wasn't very subtle, but I started airing my annoyance of the excuse economy.
I saw, you know,
that we talk about the cancel culture, we talk about the gotcha society, but it was this annoyance how we just wanted to just come up with excuses. Oh, you know, I can't go to the gym now because of COVID, when your fat ass wasn't going to the gym to start with.
It's $5 to buy a freaking jump rope, bro.
Exactly. So, and I started putting these little tweets out and these little, you know, Instagrams out, and I wasn't very subtle. And a few people went, oh, you should turn this into a book. And it wasn't a case of, yes, I'm going to turn it into the book. It was a case of, well, you've obviously noticed I'm pissed off, so you must be seeing the same aggravation as well. Where are we? And I noticed that during this 2-year period, this incredible gotcha society evolved. Mm-hmm. And it evolved to a cancerous position where we look at people, and you're in England. England, you know, and I'm British, so I can say this. We're notorious for raising people up and then knocking them off.
Tearing them down. Yeah, look at Anthony Joshua right
now.
Oh,
we love doing it. I don't understand why, but hey, yeah. Right, it's time now. We're knocking you down. We love to do that. Sadly, in the business world, we're also doing the same. So there's all these entrepreneurs out there, and understand the ratio. Probably only about 15% of the planet are entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. So we are outnumbered. Yeah, we are outnumbered by workers to entrepreneurs. However, 90% of the companies in the planet are run, founded by entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. So when you understand that paradigm, it means that you're at a table talking about your ideas 9 times out of 10 with people around you that are going to scoff. And you take the chance there of doing one of two things: finding a different table, that's what you should be doing, or you dilute your dreams and aspirations to fit in with people that don't have any.
Right.
And so I suddenly started thinking, why do we do this? So I was talking to, you know, people that I know. I was looking at stuff that I had got up to, how I lived my life. And I wanted to challenge this gotcha society by teaching people how I have conversations, how the Elon Musks, the Elton Johns, those people that I know. And then I also went through a bit of history, which I found really interesting, on what stupid goals were stated as and protested on. Mm-hmm. That we couldn't live with today. Here's a dumb one. Light bulbs. There was actually a protest banning the production of a light bulb. Guess why? Because it was viewed as dangerous. Yet 50 candles in your house each night was not.
Right. Yeah.
The car, Henry Ford, there was also protests on him and a petition trying to ban him from the production of a car. And the reason being is the car couldn't go through the woods, but my horse could. So had we listened, and it goes on, coffee, light bulbs, there's a whole ton of examples I put in here where people have dared to have stupid goals. There's so many people have laughed at and ridiculed that have become stuff that we would not be able to live without today. And I'll name drop and quote one. I was in SpaceX with Elon Musk, and there was me, two clients, and him. And my two clients, we were walking through SpaceX, and I was taking Elon to a room where he was going to be meeting some of our other guests, and I'd just brought two of my clients along just to do the walk through his factory. One of my clients was just over the moon, just walking through Elon SpaceX next to him. My other client would not shut up. And it was getting to the point where I thought, I may have to slap him, you know, I may have to kind of like just say, hey, calm it down. But, and he turned around, he was like, oh, Elon, what about this? Oh, Elon, what about this? And he was just like an excitable little bunny.
Dude, relax. Yeah.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden he turned around, and this was at a time before the NASA connection, where NASA used to have a team that would openly rebut everything that Elon said. They would just scorn it, sarcasm, ridicule it. And then this guy turned around and said, how do you feel that NASA has a team to ridicule you publicly on social every time you said something? And he asked Elon that. And I thought to myself, I'll cry. And Elon didn't even look at him. He just said, you know what? They'll always laugh at you just before they applaud.
Yes, every time.
And that was his mic drop. And from there, it just propelled. So as soon as COVID came across, I noticed that, and go loop back here to the conversation, COVID was a point where we were getting worse at communicating.
Yes.
You know, people couldn't do Zooms. I don't know how to do this. I can't go out with me mate. So we're getting worse at communicating. And what happened during COVID? Me Too, Asian hate, Black Lives Matter. Suppression. All of these really dark conversations bubbled ferociously to the top in a period where we don't know how to have a conversation. We now need to be having conversations about things that scare us and mm-hmm. may make us look stupid. And now what we're doing is someone turns around and says, hey, what's your idea? Black Lives Matter. What's your point of view? People will run away from that conversation rather than having it.
Yeah, because they're scared, because they're on camera.
And that's where we circle back into the gotcha society. You see, Today, no one's scared of trying something and failing. They're scared of trying something and fail and it being caught on camera and that becoming a nugget on TikTok and being ridiculed on Instagram Reels.
Well, they could quickly tear you down, but the whole point is doing that and being able to learn what didn't work and then being able to make a proper shifts or adapt to that problem that you would see. Remember the this triggers me. You mentioned Elon Musk. Remember that damn truck that he came out with? That truck.
Oh my God.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Remember that truck with the bulletproof glass shit and it broke?
He develops. Yeah. Now, let's break that down because I was there.
Okay? Where were you? I remember that thing and I was like, he is a freaking genius.
He unveiled a vehicle, and the only similarity between that and anything else on the road was the fact that it had round wheels and was shod in rubber. Mm-hmm. It had tires, the steering wheel, the suspension, the mechanics, the composite of the doors, the roofs. Everything was different. And here, understand this as well. Within the two-hour live stream that he did, he sold out every pre-order that was available. And then, of course, the bulletproof glass broke when a rock was thrown at it. Now, instead of the following day, us revering the fact that he had sold everything before producing a nut.
Right.
We love to sell every single product we have before we've even done it. Okay. There were people, and we're talking about Elon Musk's truck now. There are people all over the world
talking shit.
But they don't even like trucks, but they watched that.
Mm-hmm.
So not only has he sold everyone, he's got the attention of people that don't even need, like, want what he's selling, but are still engaged.
Mm-hmm.
None of that was mentioned on the day two. Day two, the only thing anyone cared about was the idiot bulletproof glass doesn't work. Now, I don't care about you. Yeah, I don't care about anyone else out there that says this. If your specification on a new vehicle you buy is bulletproof glass, you've got bigger problems. You know, it's as simple as that.
Right. Even with the opposite of where he was trying to get out of space and it freaking crashed. You haven't seen anything crash since then?
You never will, because it worked.
Right.
Did you ever see the video after that truck where he had three guns? One of them looked like a missile launcher and they shot him at the door of the truck. Did you ever see that?
I don't think I saw that, but I remember hearing that he pretty much put on a display of, like, I fixed the damn problem. And he made a point.
Few people watched it because we couldn't mock him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the problem. Today, we want to watch people walk into the glass door holding a coffee while they're on the phone. We want to see people trip up. We want to see people fall off stage. Look at our presidents. Look at our seniority in government. We would much rather. And that the headline of the day will be that the president trips on a step as he's going into the helicopter, or he drops a pencil from the podium. Forget what he's talking about regarding the Ukraine war. That doesn't even make headlines. He trips on step up to helicopter. That's the society we're in.
It's so funny.
That's what compelled me to write this book.
Right. And I love that what you're saying there, because it triggered something also with Trump. He's now obviously not in office, but I don't see anything about the U.S. anymore. I don't see anything about Biden, because people would much rather watch a potential disaster of someone that maybe doesn't know what they're saying, or if they know what they're saying, but it's actually captivating enough to actually get a couple headlines. They'll watch that
Every you know what time. I mean?
Every time.
We love a train wreck. And that's the sad thing we've got here. But we need to get through that. We need to train ourselves and need to understand how we need to set ridiculous goals and how to ignore white noise, how to ignore those naysayers and those crabs, how to set our mind right and how to be able to achieve those great goals. Because no one out there that's achieving great stuff is doing the shit all of the others are.
No, at all. And when I started to, you know, just like yourself, when I started to rub elbows with what people would call them elite. I'm going to sit there name drop and whatnot of me being around some of these people that Jay Abraham's out, you know, obviously out there in the world and looking at people that have been tied into him. Mark Casarubio, I'm not sure if you know him.
No, I haven't come across
this guy behind the scene anyways. But when I started rubbing elbows with these people, I started to realize that, well, be just me being observant, what they don't do. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm gonna start paying attention, you know, to what they don't do. And then I started emulating the process rather than results. And I fell in love with that process. And then next thing you know, 10 years later, when everyone's talking shit, throwing banana peels at screens, I'm over here going, I don't hear you now. You know what I mean? And that's when you send an email and you get an autoresponder over my team saying he's not going to respond to this message, but we're here to filter these messages now. Well, that's how it starts. But setting out ridiculous goals. And yeah, I had some really controversial goals that I would set for myself. But for the listeners right now, just kind of going, not to give too much information, obviously, the book. And I know that you live the same world I do, is I'll give it to you for free. I don't give a shit. But what you do with it is the problem. But it's not what we say, is what they hear. If you gave one tip for this book, and what would be the first step or any tips that you're going to share in this book? Can't wait for it to come out. What would you share with the listeners today?
It's really getting you in a position to be able to grow. And to be able to be in a position to grow, to be in a position, you've got to eliminate other areas. So it teaches you the basics of, first of all, controlling who's at your table, who's in your Rolodex, who's at your room, who's your support mechanism. You know, you brought up Jay. Jay's been my boy for many, many years, and he lives probably about 20 minutes away from me. And I'll come up with an idea, and I'll sit down with Jay, and I'll be like, Jay, I'm going to do this, and then look at it. And at the end, it'll go, is that it? And I'll be like, what do you mean? Is that it? He's like, well, I just expected more from you. I just expected, with your experience, with your credibility, with your notoriety, with your connections, you know, treble that. You know, and you suddenly realize that the right people are in the room are not just there to support, they're also there to challenge.
Yes.
And that's what we need. So the book, I would say the first ingredient of the book. And actually, very much first ingredient, because when you buy the book and you open it, there's a QR code in there. And when you scan that with your phone, it's going to send you to a private video, which does set up the necessary mindset to be able to get you to start focusing on the opportunity and ignoring that noise. Not just kind of like, how do I deal with it? How to ignore it? When someone that means nothing to my world is jeering at me, now I can actually start ignoring it, because they're not giving anything.
Right. And that's one thing I loved about the first book. And it was funny, is I didn't read it until after we met and you came onto the show. And I was like, well, I have to read this book now. And you told me I pretty much predicted the book. You're like, did you read the book? I'm like, no, I didn't read it yet, but I'm going to read it. I promise. But when I read the book, it's like the books these days, and this is why I would read, I much rather would like to immerse myself into books back in the 60s, 70s, even like obviously even more. Games People Play was the biggest book I ever read, Dr. Eric Byrne. And that's what I learned, that I wasn't crazy. Right? Well, kind of. But your book, the first book, you know, Blue Fishing, The Art of Making Things Happen, you're not convincing people in the first 3-4 chapters on why they bought the damn book in the first place. Do you see my point?
Yeah.
And then you go into this book and you're actually already setting them, obviously setting them understanding this is what's required to get the most from this book.
And that's the key. I don't want people to buy it and just stick it on their shelf and make themselves feel good. I want people to get it and do something with it. No one gets slimmer by buying a diet book. They get slimmer from taking the action and becoming slimmer. That's the byproduct of them working out, changing their diet, and those things. This book is actually going to be able to change the way you actually do things in order to be able to get what you want. You All actually right. say about Jay, I'm looking at the back of the book because I thought to myself, he endorsed it. He's actually on the back of the book.
I love you. Jay's funny, man.
He put on there, simply put, I endorse him. Can I say any more than that? Jay Abraham. Boom.
Right. I mean, you got to keep it simple, right? I mean, I remember this is when, obviously Facebook bought Instagram and whatnot. And obviously, I was doing things in education space and going from the education space to online. And I was obviously working behind the scenes. And it was pretty funny. I was like, this person that I was connected to through social media. They're like, Jay Abraham follows you on Twitter. And I'm like, yeah, that was like way back in the day when we thought Twitter was something. It was really funny. But tell Jay I said what's up for sure.
I will.
Yeah. But other than that, guys, if you didn't get anything from this, that means you don't have a pulse. Okay. So I will tell you that. But guys, make sure October 18th, if you're in Los Angeles, make sure you go to the website. The thing's streaming on the bottom. If you're not listening, if you're not watching this, go to Steve Sims, stevedsims.com. You'll find everything, his podcast. You'll probably see a little bit more stuff on myself as well. But Steve, man, it's always a pleasure, man.
You're a star. Thanks for having me, boy.
Always, man. Guys, peace out. Much love. Follow Steve. All you have to do is go into the show notes. You'll find everything we need to. And if you can't find it, that means that my staff isn't doing their damn job. So just reach out and let me know. Peace out, guys. Much love.